You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Glad to be here, Jim. Again, thanks for having me.
Mark, what was the big story of the day for you?
Well, for me, it was what's going on in Washington today. There is an event at the Kennedy Caucus Room in the Capitol. It's a Disclosure Day event, reference the extraterrestrials and UAP phenomenon. So it's been going on all day today. We've had several U.S. representatives, congressional representatives speaking, who are trying to open up the disclosure. And of course, they're using the term disclosure because Spielberg obviously made that film that just came out, you know, a big name or description. So it's going to be used a lot, I guess. Avi Loeb, the famous Harvard astronomer who believes in the extraterrestrial event, you know, having claimed that we may have seen a couple craft cross the, one is a comet there now, and one was that Umaluma craft or object that passed a couple few years ago through the solar system that he felt may have been an extraterrestrial object, because the way it violated a lot of the normal parameters of objects entering the solar system and passing right through and not succumbing to the gravitational force of the sun or anything. So anyway, Avi was speaking today, and he's done a lot of work in this area. And he's, you know, purely scientific based. He's not looking, you know, into the skies and claiming that we've seen recovered craft or visited aliens, as, you know, many believe, including myself, but that's a whole other discussion. He's out there, like, in the Pacific Ocean a couple of years ago, where they found objects at the bottom of the ocean that he believes may have been from extraterrestrial origin. The chemistry and the physics of some of the objects he found, that an analysis indicated that they weren't from the Earth. And so he's done, you know, he's been funded to do a lot of this research to, you know, extricate things that might be there. So the big story today for me was just watching the disclosure forum at the in Congress today. But, you know, we spent hours discussing this and where it's all going to go, but nothing's new for me. I've been doing this for decades, so it's an avocational pursuit of mine. Now, on Wall Street today, you know, the big story was Micron and Micron earnings. You know, the stock surged to a new record high on earnings. They got up to, what was it? $1,255 a share, and, you know, came out with some good news, and the stock's been basically one of the big bull names here, being on the, in the chip category. So, you know, maybe it's a blow off here on the earnings, but, you know, everybody's been hot about this stock and the whole sector for a while. But you got to keep in mind, when you look at a stock like Micron, I mean, you know, September 25, it was $114 a share. And here, you know, less than three quarters of a year later, it's $1,250. I mean, that's like 10 times, 1,000% gain, you know. So I've been doing this a long time, and obviously I'm going to miss some of these spectacular, you know, 1,000% type advances, because that's not the way I trained or traded over the decades. So I'm more hit and miss on smaller, shorter term moves. So those who are fortunate enough or insightful enough that bought this thing at $110 a share and own it at $1,200 and are still holding, you know, more power to them. But that's not my cup of tea. In any event, way extended here on good news. Maybe it's going to go further. There's no clear sign of a top yet, except that it's sort of parabolic in the fact that it's gone straight up. But as I said a moment ago, it's not my cup of tea. You know, if it dropped 500, 600 points or something, there might be a trade there. So I'll just watch it. So that was the two, you know, the key events in terms of, you know, Wall Street. And we also know that big subject here the last couple, 3 days has been the sell-off in silver and gold, which is, you know, no great surprise. We've been, you know, cautious for a little bit on it. We try to keep some positions, but, you know, we're in a corrective phase as we are with Bitcoin and crypto. And, you know, some are attributed to the fact that the U.S. dollar has been strong, but no surprise there that, you know, we've seen that weakness. So, you know, the big question for the bulls, you know, is, you know, what's next? With the strength in the dollar, is that going to continue to hurt gold? I mean, there are times that sometimes gold works with the dollar, not necessarily inverse to it, if you check back in history. And there's a big rumor on the street, you know, or at least on the internet, about the repricing of gold. You know, some are throwing out July 4th, the American Independence Day, as the day it would happen. I don't know, you know, if that would happen or not, or will happen down the road, but there's a lot of, we talked about the ARMA Act and so forth in a previous recording, you know, where official price of gold in terms of the books, like $42.13 a share is how the U.S. government is holding the value of its gold when we know it's, you know, 100 times more higher in price than that. So the question is, will they officially reprice gold in terms of what it's stored at Fort Knox or other places? And though I've been skeptic about Fort Knox for a long time, but that aside, you know, that would potentially provide a, you know, a bit of a boost, both on a price basis and psychological basis, if that happened. You know, part of the plan there is to try to mitigate the huge debt the U.S. has, and by increasing the value of that asset, you know, it sort of puts a put some lipstick on the pig, so to speak. You know, makes things look a little bit better, but the debt is still overall there and still growing. But bringing that book value, so to speak, of the asset up would, you know, be a psychological plus at the very least. It might give the gold bulls, you know, a bit of a rear end boost here. So we'll see if that unfolds. And there's been a lot of talk about this for a while and tying gold to treasury bonds and so forth. But, you know, ultimately we all know with, the $36 trillion debt and all that nonsense going on, you know, we're in trouble, you know. So the question is when, you know, when we pay the piper, and, you know, we can speculate forever about that one. It's been an ongoing story for many, many years. So that's the other thing that's sort of in the rumor mill here, what's going to happen in and around that July 4th date. And there's been, you know, a lot of speculation too. You know, we mentioned, or we have mentioned off air, discussing Bitcoin. It's been weak. You know, basically it's been in a bear trend, but Bitcoin runs in these huge multi-year cycles. I'm not going to give the details of the cycles here. We'll mention it in the newsletter, but, you know, we were due for a high last fall, the end of 2025, and it came right on schedule, and the analysis suggested it might be down. And I think we mentioned this way back, that the potential is for a decline all through 2026, and that seems to be overall unfolding. So there is a date ahead that supposedly would be a bottoming time frame, and we'll discuss that in our newsletter as well. And as far as Congress is concerned, the Clarity Act has been sort of held up in by the Senate. It was approved by the U.S. House of Representatives, and Senate hasn't, it was out of committee, I had heard, but, and there was hope that it would be passed by July 4th. It's July 4th keeps coming up here. So the tape action on it doesn't say it's going to happen, but it could. And that would, you know, give a big boost to many of the other cryptos out there, because it would, passage of the act would permit institutions to legally invest in the crypto sector, and it would open up the floodgates, so to speak, in terms of an institutional participation. So the you know, the proponents of the Clarity Act have been pushing that notion for a while. And, you know, I guess when it passes, if it passes, it should pass at some point, whether it passes now or next year, or at some point it should. There's a lot of vested interest in getting it passed. Then we'll see how institutional investors, react to it, and how many of these altcoins, as they call them, non-Bitcoin coins, how they're implemented in commerce, and how they begin to perform. But I would say it's definitely something you got to watch and see if that news unfolds. So the repricing of gold and the Clarity Act are sort of the two governmental potential actions. At some point when they happen, they should implement some movement in those markets, which should be tradable. So and in anticipation of that, I guess you could take positions and figure, well, maybe it's not happening July 4th, maybe it's next year or whatever, but at least you got your foot in the door, because, it's like anything else. When a story comes, you might be late, opens up on a huge gap and you end up chasing this stuff. But I think that's still sort of the goal, and we'll see how all that unfolds. So that's, sort of the general summary. We've discussed other things, Jim, too, fact that we just experienced the summer equinox, and the solstice, that is, and around that June 22nd time frame. And I kept putting out little warning signs in my newsletter, behold the summer solstice. And, we did see a big sell-off in some of the NASDAQ names. Of course, the exception today, you would say, Micron. Of course, it's not a NASDAQ stock, but it's a semiconductor name. But, we did see some volatility in the markets. We certainly saw a break in the metals. So, the summer solstice, I still would argue, had some impact here, and it was sort of a warning sign that there could be some volatility in the market. Most analysts, might recognize this, but they're afraid to mention it, figuring it's going to jeopardize their client relationships or their jobs, which we hear. I'm, of course, not afraid to discuss at all. So I see something that works and want to pay attention to it. And interestingly, coming up in the next, today is the 25th. So in 4 days, another astrological or astronomical event occurs, which is the event described as the Mercury retrograde. And I've known about this for decades. I remember when I was a floor trader years ago, I remember some financial astrologers talking about it, and I sort of dismissed it until I start tracking it. And if you watch the if you look at what the look it up and see what the retrograde is, it's just a visual depiction of the planet seemingly moving opposite in the sky, which is not, it's not really doing. That's because of the rotation around the sun, but there's certain points where it's sort of moving backwards in the sky. So that event, they attribute the term Mercury retrograde. But what they found over time is during that period, there's one, it's about a 30-day period coming up, and there's another one later in the year, that sometimes you get some unusual movements, both in, the weather and in politics and in communications and the markets. And you get a lot of uncertainty during this period where things sort of go one way and then they go the other. And there's a loss of stability during these retrograde periods. So, I've been casually, following it for decades, and there are some periods where it really shows some import. So like anything else, you want to keep an eye on. And on top of everything else here, for those who are, interested, as I mentioned earlier, there is an event with regard to the sun. We've got a big sunspot, huge one. They say it's many, many times the size of the Earth, in the southern hemisphere, sort of moving toward us in direction, meaning that if it faces the Earth, theoretically, it could precipitate, these coronal massive ejections, CMEs, they call them, and that creates, the interference into our electromagnetic activities, and could impact, not only create auroras, but, could distort the electromagnetic communications, and the worst case could create a super negative event like the Carrington event that we've talked about many times in the mid-19th century. So I'm not to say it's going to happen, but it's something that the smart people that are tracking this thing are monitoring it. So that's happening now too. So it's not, you know, we're approaching the summer. A lot of people are away. A lot of people are traveling, but there are things going on, and there's always interesting things to talk about.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, the IPO for SpaceX was pretty spectacular. It was priced at about $150, went up to $225, and it's now fallen back to almost the same mark it started at. Is this something you hold for a long time?
Well, it depends when you got in. If you were lucky, I got lucky. I'd asked my broker to see if I can get some shares on the IPO, and I got a very, 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 very small fraction of what I had asked for. So it was at the IPO price at $135, and then within, you know, a matter of about 2 days, it was 100 points higher. So I'm not embarrassed to say that I sold it and took a nice little profit there. And, you know, many would argue, well, you buy, you hold it forever. I'm more of a trader. The fact that it's retraced this much is bullish in my event. It's sort of correcting the big spike afterwards. And there was an acquisition that Elon Musk announced, I think, right after the offering. And I think in the AI sphere, and that sort of gave a lot of boost to the price of the stock, why it surged well over 200. So there was some news event at that time, which we didn't know about prior to the first day it traded. And then suddenly this news hit, and I guess, you know, he plans everything pretty well. So I guess I drove the stock higher. You know, I'm a big believer in Elon Musk, and nothing could detract me from that. And hopefully he stays well and healthy for a long time. He's done a lot, to accomplished a lot. Whether the stock is a buy here, it's around 150. It's down quite a bit from the high. If you're a long-term player as an allocation in your portfolio, I would say yes. I mean, you could decide what percentage you want to put there with a view that maybe you would add at a later point. I mean, you know, there's nothing stopping the stock from dropping another 100 points and being a $50 stock before it goes back to 200-300, you know. So anything could happen in the markets. You've seen a lot of IPOs, some big names, some in the crypto area and some other areas that open up big, run, and then they collapse, and they take a while to build a base before they can go up again. So I'm a philosophical buyer of it because of Elon. And I think it makes sense. You know, I bought back the shares that I just referred to a moment ago that I had sold. I mean, you know, it was a big difference from where I sold to where it is now. So, and holding a few shares, sure, why not?
Now, some people are floating the theory that the war against Iran was really an attempt to increase inflation, because inflation seems to be good for the stock market. Do you think that was the goal of the attack on Iran?
Not at all. I'm a believer that he believes that we have an evil force that needs to be eradicated. I mean, I compare the Iranian regime to the Nazi regime. And unfortunately, not only because they're anti-Israel, but because they're looking to, you know, because of their beliefs and the way they conduct themselves. I mean, all the LGBT and gay people that are so vocal here in the U.S., I would tell them to go visit Iran, and they'd probably get hung from the gallows there as soon as they arrived. So all the liberal, socialist, communist people here in this country who are so, you know, pro-change, let them go to Iran and find out what a great country that is, and they would find out it's not at all. So, you know, I believe Trump believes not only Netanyahu, but you know, that the regime and the country has to be restored to a normal, functioning, level-headed group of people that don't have extreme destructive views that they have. And unfortunately, that hasn't happened. There should have been a regime change. They should have gone in there, and before hitting Venezuela, in my opinion, they should have gone in there and sort of executing the leader. I mean, just go in there and take it over, you know, and maybe done it secretly in a way that maybe the casualties would have been minimal. So whether that's even possible, I'm not a military person. But as long as that group is still there, unfortunately, they act, you know, surreptitiously on the internet, creating all kinds of, you know, releases and, you know, trying to do what they can to disrupt communications. And they're trying to subvert as many, you know, countries, particularly the West, that they can, and they need to be eliminated. And I don't think Trump get in there just for a political reason. If he was doing for politics, he wouldn't have done anything because it would have been a calm event. Nothing would have happened. Eventually, Iran would have had maybe already had a nuclear weapon, and then we would have had some really serious problems, and things would have been calm for a while, and there wouldn't have been all this uproar that he shouldn't have done it. But you know, I don't want to speak in extreme terms what I would have done if I was in his position, because it's going to sound awfully crazy. But you know, you have to eliminate them. What did we do to Nazi Germany? We bombed the hell out of it, and we invaded it. And we cleaned them out. Then we put all the bad people up for trial in Nuremberg. And the same thing should happen here, because I think, it's a replicate of the Nazi-type formula. And as long as they exist, we have problems. So anyway, that's my opinion.
How long before the U.S. invades Cuba?
I don't know, but it seems like it's going to happen soon. Or maybe it'll happen the way Venezuela happened, where they go in there and they take Raul Castro out secretly during the night and put in their own people, or you know, blockade the country in some way. I mean, you know, Cuba is a problem too, but not the same level of threat that Iran was or is. I grew up in Miami during the whole Cuban invasion. I was a kid, 1950s. You know, when the Bay of Pigs event took place in the early 60s, and I saw all the Cubans come into Miami and the change of the city, and I got to meet a lot of the Cuban people who are extremely industrious, wonderful people. They've financial geniuses in a way. They created a huge Miami success, has been because of the Cuban invasion and the Cubans coming in, leaving Cuba, building a strong Latin economy there, banks and all kind of real estate and everything else. So people themselves are great. You just have, you know, crazy socialist communists at the top, and a few were lucky enough to get out. And whether, you know, it's unfortunate the Bay of Pigs didn't succeed, you know, decades ago. That would have been great, but it didn't. It was mismanaged. I don't have all the details, but there's a lot of stories about that. So are you asking me when it's going to happen, or... It should happen. I don't know when, and you know, how they're going to go about doing it. But the same thing as we're talking about in Iran, there has to be a regime change. You got to get the bad apples out of there. You've got to institute a pro-Western, pro-capitalist economy and government. And it's got to happen. If it doesn't happen, it's just going to fester and continue to create problems. So I admire Trump for taking the action in Venezuela, because Maduro was a outright crook and contrary force to everything that we believe positive, including drug smuggling and everything else. And then he's trying to get rid of the bad apples, and congratulations that he's trying to do it, you know, and I'm totally supportive of that.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Have a great weekend. Thanks for asking me.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. You can find us on X at HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.